All right, guys. Well, today we have an awesome stream. I've been trying to get Lisa on the program here for a couple weeks, but Lisa went out and hurt herself. So, Lisa, are you doing okay now?
I am doing so much better. Thank you.
Yeah,
it feels good to be able to have a little range of motion.
Yeah, she threw out her back. How'd you do that, Lisa?
Well, I have chronic back problems, whether it be sciatica issues, and I have scoliosis. I've had it forever. So I try to do certain things to offset it and try to keep like a curve in my lower back. And so I do all these exercises. But then when you go through big, long stints of time where you feel good, you kind of slack off and then you pay for it later.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's what I did.
Well, I'm glad you sound, you look smiling and happy right now.
Yeah,
so.
I feel so much better. Whew.
Good. Well, I'm glad we got you on the program. I don't know how long I'm going to have this program, guys, because I got another strike today. So it's gotten so bad on YouTube, you go to upload it, and before it's even published, I was just premiering a video that I did, and it gave me a strike and removed the video for hate speech. Crazy. So I don't know how long I'm going to be here, guys. I really want to just encourage you guys to go over to our BitChute channel. Check out our BitChute and Brighteon. I'm going to be removing videos from YouTube here and just putting them on this BitChute channel only. I really want to keep the show as long as possible, so I'm going to have to really think about all the videos I have. Even as unlisted, you can't even have unlisted videos or private videos that are bad. Like, they'll find them and strike down your channel. So I'm just going to be actually removing videos from this channel, and we're going to be premiering them on BitChute. So go head over there and Brighteon. So if you want to find us on Brighteon, it is Generation Conspiracy Channel. And then if you want to find us on BitChute, it's Framing the World. But today we're going to have a very interesting talk. We're talking with Lisa, and we are going to be discussing fasting. Now, fasting is something I've never done. Never once. Not for spiritual reasons, health reasons. I've never done fasting. Obviously, we know that it's good to do spiritually and it's good to do for your health, but I just, for some reason, I don't know, I've just been lazy. Maybe I just don't know how about going, I don't know how about doing it. And so we're going to be talking with Lisa today, and she's going to explain how she does it. She's going to explain the benefits of fasting and why it's so good for your body. And I think it's just going to be a really interesting talk. I want to start implementing this in my life, maybe not to the level that Lisa does, where she fasts 2 days a week. 2 days,
yeah.
Lisa, that yeah. is just...
Yeah, I bumped it up. I bumped it up for years. I did 1 day a week. I did Wednesdays, and then now I'm Monday, Thursday.
What is wrong with you? Monday, Thursday. What day is it today?
No, wait till you find out.
Tuesday. It's Tuesday. See. Okay, good. So this is your happy day. Now, no,
well,
as
it's funny because you actually have much higher cognitive abilities while you're fasting, but
okay.
I still have residual ketones, so I'll be all right.
All right. Well, you'll explain that all in a little bit, but you know, I think it's great that you do it because you can enlighten our audience here on the benefits of it. Enlighten me, because you know what, you hear about it, and you know the Bible says stuff, you know, for reasons, and I believe
yeah.
that it is healthy. So. Let's explore this here on the show tonight. I appreciate you guys tuning in. Make sure to subscribe to this channel and our other channels. Of course, subscribe to our Patreon account and just help us out over there. But why fasting, Lisa? Why should we fast? Who should fast? And, you know, when should we not fast? I know that's a lot right there, but just kind of start us off on why we should fast.
Okay, well, since you mentioned it initially about biblical fasts and how, you know, we are commanded to fast. And I would say that if you're going to do it for a spiritual reason, you would want to, it gives you more time to pray. So think about how much time food preparation really takes. You have to go to the store. You know, for you, you got to drive pretty far. You got to go to the store. You got to gather everything. You got to bring it home. You got to put it away. You've got to cut it up. You've got to cook it. You've got to prepare it. You've got to wash the dishes. You got to put away the leftovers. It's a lot of time. When you, if you were to do that for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, it's such a big part of the day, production-wise and time-wise. So think about if you were to offset all of that, how much more time you would have. So you would have that much more time to devote to prayer and devote to reading your Bible. And so that aspect is incredible. And then, of course, everything that God has for us always has like a hidden benefit. So there's health benefits. And so some people, if you are not in a stage of life where you have that independence of not having to prepare food for a lot of other people, like a family, then, you know, you don't have that extra time. So you can just focus on the health benefits of fasting. And that's kind of what we're going to focus on today. So I'm going to try to convey to you and your audience that your body is actually so much better equipped to deal with much less food or no food coming in than it is to deal with an excess of it. So for example, today and, you know, in 2020, more people are dying from an excess of food and the consequences of that than they are from starvation. Starvation is a real thing. And you cross a line when you have a certain percentage of body fat, you cannot fast. You're past the point of getting the benefits and you will start catabolic effects on your muscle, so then your lean tissue, and that's where it's really bad. But most people, even a lean person that has, say, 12% body fat, that's still fairly lean, they have over 100,000 calories at their disposal, which is so much more, 100,000 calories compared to, you know, how much could you possibly have in your glycogen in your liver or your muscle glycogen. It's just a very finite amount. And that's why marathon runners hit the wall and have to supplement with like those gels and to keep the glucose going, because they aren't metabolically flexible enough to tap, to switch gears into burning fat for fuel at that point. So there are extreme athletes that are trained. Dr. Jeff Volek trains extreme athletes and he gets them to be metabolically flexible and to fat adapt them so that they can break their own records, because they have this unbelievable source of fuel that burns cleaner. And that's why you can hold your breath longer, because you don't have to need as much oxygen for each gram. Like you get 9 calories a gram from fat and only 4 calories a gram from carbohydrates. So you have less oxidative stress. You need less oxygen, therefore you can hold your breath longer. It's just incredible. So that's really the focal point, is that our bodies are actually so much more adapt and so much better equipped to deal with a lack of food than an excess. So I think you started off with like, well, why fast? Well, it lowers inflammation. Inflammation is the underpinning of all chronic disease. So every chronic disease that you look at, whether it be cancer or neurodegenerative diseases, everything has inflammation underneath. And so inflammation is a driver of growth factors. So you have your cancer cell proliferation will increase under an inflammatory state. Now, the difference when people have to understand, there's a difference between chronic inflammation and acute inflammation. So acute inflammation, if you were to jump off of, you know, a ledge and land on your feet and you've seen fine, but you have shin splints, you know, you have all these little micro fractures in your shins, your bones. So your body will activate an acute inflammatory response and increase the circulation to go there to bring all the nutrients and things to facilitate healing. So that's a good thing, but that's only temporary. It's an acute thing that has a beginning and an end. Whereas chronic inflammation is the really bad thing that will, you know, goes along with every bad disease out there. So where should we start? Should we start
Well, I would like to start with, so, okay, let's say I want to start to fast. I want to fast tomorrow.
Okay.
I want to start fasting tomorrow. What does that entail? Does that mean I just stop eating, stop drinking, just everything? Or is there a different way to go about it?
Yes, definitely. Since you've never done it before, it's just like any other discipline. You just the same people that have never exercised before really shouldn't go sign up for a, you know, a 5K tomorrow. So you have to work your way up to it. And just like any other discipline, it gets easier the more you do it. So for example, one of the best ways to start would be to kind of condition your body, just like with exercise. You want to condition your body to burning fat for fuel. And there's a couple of really easy ways to kind of ease your way into it. And one of them would be to restrict your eating window to an 8-hour eating window. So instead of eating all day from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed, just make it a point to say, okay, what would be ideal for me? If I had to pick an 8-hour window, would I like 9 to 5? Would I like 10 to 6? Would I like 11 to 7? And choose that window and stick to it. Stick to it for a week. So you would have an 8-hour window of eating and a 16-hour fasting window. So it's like an 8-16. So try to do that for a week. And then what that will do is hopefully, depending on your activity level, it's going to vary with each person. You may get your body to start to become more insulin sensitive, to lower your insulin levels, because in order to tap into fat for fuel, insulin is inversely proportional to glucagon and another thing called hormone sensitive lipase, which helps break down the fat. So you're never going to have glucagon released to tell your body to break down fat for fuel if your insulin levels are steadily high. And if you're eating and grazing all day long, your insulin levels stay high. So that's one way. Another way would be to adapt more of a low carb diet or even a ketogenic diet temporarily, just to kind of condition your body. So if your body all of a sudden has only fat coming in, because a ketogenic diet is primarily about 80% fat, good fats, healthy fats, avocados and, coconut oils, all kinds of good fats. And then about 15% moderate protein. It's not Atkins. It's not a high protein diet. So moderate protein and then just about 5% carbohydrates. So it's very low carb. So that will help you kind of get your body metabolically and hormonally in that rhythm of saying, okay, you know, the glucagon's being released. I'm going to start breaking down, going into my fat stores and breaking down those triglycerides. And it's important to know, a lot of people right away, fasting has it's such an emotionally charged issue. Like, you know, just like the masks or whatever, people are like, oh, fasting's bad. Oh, fasting's amazing. It seems like nobody's really kind of in the middle. They get really hostile when you talk about fasting because it doesn't make sense. But just like exercise is a stress on the body. So as exercise, you are tearing muscle, you are breaking down. It's a catabolic effect, but then the rest period is when you build back the muscle and become stronger. So it activates all these pathways and all these mechanisms to actually make you stronger after it's over. And fasting's the same way. So yeah, you are breaking down, you are activating all these genes and all these metabolic pathways, but then after the refeeding, you're going to become stronger. So for example, after 24 hours, you start to increase stem cell production, and stem cell production will actually go up. It peaks on day three. Now I don't know if they've ever measured it in humans, but this is all the animal studies. They're seeing a consistent pattern of at day three, you peak. So for example, when I threw out my back, I couldn't really, it was so painful to even move or do anything other than just lay on my side. I thought, well, I'm going to fast because I don't even want to get up to go to the bathroom. And I don't believe in dry fasting. So I sipped on water, but I still even restricted my water just because I didn't want to have to get up. And I fasted for 4 straight days because I figured, well, I want to cash in on some new stem cells to repair my back. And because I was so inactive, I thought, well, maybe I didn't really peak at 3 days. Maybe I need that extra day. So I wanted to just be sure. And I did the 4th day. And so here I am, you know, I've got all these stem cells. People spend so much money on these, you know, kind of sketchy procedures of getting stem cell injections. Why not cause your body to make their own stem cells? And these are stem cells are brand new polypleomorphic. I forget how they can become anything. And it's so exciting. Like, they don't need to exploit babies and do these horrible, you know, aborted fetal stem cells. They don't need to do anything like that. Adult stem cells are just as amazing. And so if you have, you know, have you ever heard of people talking about longevity in terms of your telomeres shortening, those like little shoelace ends on the end of the DNA? Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Okay. Well, like on your DNA, the ends, like picture it like a shoelace, and those little things on the end of your shoelace are like a telomere. And if those start to fray, they can kind of, again, correlation isn't causation, but they kind of correlate the unraveling of telomeres to how much longer you have left to live. But if you can upregulate stem cell production, which actually goes down so much as you age, you don't have that stem cell production like you did when you're young. So if you can upregulate that and get your body to do that on its own, then you have all brand new cells that have brand new telomeres. And there's an enzyme called telomerase that will run along the DNA and do all this repairing and repair the telomeres. It's incredible. So that's one of the reasons you see the longevity factor. So anyway, going back to, you know, ketogenic diet, low carb diet, and restricting your eating window are the baby steps towards fasting. And so once you do that for 1 or 2 weeks and be like, okay, you know, and if you do get a headache, because that's a common effect, they call it like the keto flu, and people go on the ketogenic diet and they get like almost like flu-like symptoms. It's actually the same symptoms you would get from low sodium. Because the reason being is that when you restrict your carbohydrates, insulin is going to come down. And when insulin comes down, water follows insulin. So you instantly lose all your water weight. So it's so incredible. Like depending on the person, within 24 to 36 hours of fasting, you're going to lose like 4 pounds of water weight. Because your insulin levels have now come down so much, and all that excess water, and water with it has sodium in it. So your sodium levels have been depleted proportionate to your body. So if you just take a little good salt, like Himalayan salt or a Celtic sea salt, that will offset those keto flu symptoms. And then you're going to be ready for maybe your first 1 day fast. And a lot of people will do consider like a 1 day fast, you know, dinner to dinner, which it is, that's 24 hours, but you really should try to go the whole day without eating and sleep. You know what I mean? So then you bump up your time so much more, and it's really not that much harder to skip that last meal.
So when you fast, so you drink water then. When you're talking about this fast, you're drinking water the whole time. Now, does water have anything in it? It's just water.
Just water. I do just water. You can, any clear liquid is supposed to be legal, so to speak, on a fast. So for example, you know, a little later on, maybe you can pop up the picture of the longest medically recorded supervised fast, which was Angus Barbary. And he fasted for 382 days. He went from 400 and I think you've got it, 400 and some pounds down to 180 pounds after 382 days with no ill effects. And they did give him occasional liquid vitamin supplements because of it was 382 days. Wow. So, and they gave him, he was allowed to have black tea and black coffee and soda water if he would, you know. So I do have black coffee and I do have like green tea with nothing in it. occasionally when I fast.
Okay, all right. Well, then that will work out great for me because I love coffee.
Yeah, he did. It was 382 days, and it was out of Scotland, 1964-65. So,
That's crazy.
So people have to realize that if you have stored food energy on your body, it's no different than having a meal or just using what's already a meal from like a long time ago.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like when someone becomes insulin resistant, or they call it insulin resistant or pre-diabetic, where their blood sugar is starting to creep up, right? They're not fully diabetic yet. And one of the things to note would be that your cells, you're producing plenty of insulin. Because when you're a diabetic, there's type 1, which is an autoimmune disease where you don't produce insulin. Those cells don't produce the insulin, so you have to take it. But when you're a type 2 diabetic, you produce so much insulin. The problem is the cells aren't listening. They're ignoring the insulin. So the insulin's knocking at the door saying, hey, excuse me, we need to get this glucose in out of the bloodstream and into the cell. And the cell's like, oh my gosh, we are packed with glucose. We don't want it. So they ignore it. So the idea, you know, just common sense would say, okay, we'll stop, you know, eating, lower that insulin, lower that blood sugar, let the body start tapping into that fuel. So you can think of it like if you never use the food in your freezer and you keep going shopping and you're just using what's in the refrigerator and then occasionally trying to shove more stuff in the freezer and trying to sit on it, that's the effect of a type 2 diabetic taking more insulin just to really cram that glucose into the cell that doesn't want to take it. So does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. So let's go through some of the benefits of doing a fast. You did describe one benefit, but could you go into more benefits?
Yes. One of the, in 2016, the Nobel Prize went to a Japanese researcher, and he was able to explain the process called autophagy. Autophagy is just a compound word, auto meaning self, phagy meaning eating. So it's a self-eating. So what your body will go through in the presence of fasting, it upregulates these things called autophagosomes. And these autophagosomes just go throughout each individual cell. They will break down broken down cell organelles, and they'll just recycle the amino acids. They can preserve your lean body mass with those amino acids. They can rebuild new organelles. It's like this whole incredible house cleaning process. So that in and of itself is just like this renewal process. It's almost like cleaning your house. Like it's a house cleaning process that can only really be activated through a fast. So you, again, it peaks. It depends on the person. I want to say it peaks after about 48 hours. So you don't even have to do like the super, super long fast to get into a good production of autophagosomes. The longevity benefits, for example, you know, the powerhouse of the cell, the mitochondria. We all remember that from high school biology. And the mitochondria can burn a healthy cell's mitochondria can burn either fat or glucose for fuel. And it has no problem using either one. Whereas like, for example, a cancer cell, which we'll definitely talk about in depth, a cancer cell cannot use fat for fuel. They are metabolically, you know, the genes have changed. They have mutations. They can't use fat for fuel. They can only use glucose, and they don't even use glucose in the mitochondria because the mitochondria are broken essentially in a cancer cell, and it's had to revert to a very kind of almost like a primitive form of making energy, which is fermentation. So for example, if you a molecule of glucose can produce 38 ATP, which is heard about ATP is the energy currency of the body. So a regular cell can produce 38 ATP, and that's adenosine triphosphate, but then a cancer cell can only produce 2 ATP from that same molecule of glucose. So they have to upregulate the glucose receptors around the cell. And so they increase it by about 19 times. So they have 19 times the glucose receptors on the outside of the cell. So those will 19 times the 2 ATP will give them that 38 ATP in order to survive. But it's a totally different a way of making energy. And so people, oncologists or cancer doctors, know this. So when you go to get a PET scan, they give you irradiated sugar. So they're giving you irradiated glucose. And so when that glucose, where is it going to be most obvious? It's going to light up around the cells that have 19 times the glucose receptors. And so there you look on your scan and you say, oh, well, there's your tumor just sucking up sugar like nobody's business, right? With 19 times. So the oncologist has that knowledge. They know that cancer cells are sugar fiends, yet they don't even think diet has anything to do with it. Like they said, you can eat whatever you want, which makes absolutely no rational sense based on what they know, that cancer cells feed on sugar. And you have to always differentiate too. People get confused because sugar and glucose are not the same. You measure, they say blood sugar and blood glucose synonymously, but glucose and sugar is half glucose, half fructose, right? So half of that glucose is going into your bloodstream, right? And then the other half, which is fructose, is going to only be metabolized by your liver. It's literally a toxin. And I know we haven't talked about that so much, but it causes fatty liver and all kinds of other problems. Fructose, like high fructose corn syrup and things like that, are really bad. But that's just a really good way to when you hear blood sugar, it's not blood sugar as in like sugar, table sugar, it's blood glucose. So that's why a piece of white bread will have a higher glycemic index and elevate your blood sugar more than the comparable amount of table sugar, because only half of that table sugar is actually glucose, whereas white bread is like pure glucose. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So insulin, again, is a growth factor, and chronically high insulin, which if you're pre-diabetic and you have chronically high blood sugar, what that's doing, it's just a combination for disaster. Because what happens if you have chronic high blood sugar going through your blood vessels, this is why diabetics, you know, the long-term side effects are, you know, amputations from damaging the blood vessels, those small, tiny blood vessels that feed the extremities. They have, you know, kidney failure from damaging the blood vessels that feed into the kidneys. They go blind from damaging the blood vessels that go to the eyes. And those are just horrific side effects. So, and the reason being is that the blood vessels are lined, the endothelial lining of the blood vessel is made out of proteins. And there's a reaction called either the Maillard reaction, or it's called glycation. And that glycation damage between sugar, or I should say glucose and the proteins actually have this reaction. And it's a browning effect. It's the same thing when you put the glaze on a ham, it turns the skin of the ham brown. It's turning your insides brown, turning your collagen brown on the inside of you, and it's causing damage. So essentially, glycation damage produces what they call AGEs, advanced glycation end products. So in your blood vessels, when you have all this elevated blood sugar that's damaging the endothelial lining, what happens? You have all this damaged tissue, and then cholesterol comes in like the band-aid to fix it. And so cholesterol gets the bad rap, but it's kind of like blaming the firefighter for the fire. Your blood vessels are inflamed, they're damaged from the glycation, and the cholesterol or the little firefighter comes to put out the fire and repair everything, and he gets the blame. It's not the cholesterol, it's the elevated blood sugar. It's the chronic high insulin that your cells aren't listening to the signal, because you have to empty out. You've got to clean out those cells of their glucose in order to put glucose back in.
So break it down.
And that's why your body needs that break.
So break it down for people. What are the benefits in a just a simple kind of way? Like, what are the major benefits of fasting?
Okay, so one of the biggest benefits I've experienced, like, you know, I can feel it, is the cognitive, higher cognitive function. You have such clarity of thinking. I mean, forget no brain fog, nothing. You're just, your brain is just on fire when you are in a fasted state. And the deeper the fasted state, the higher your ketone levels, because your brain loves to burn ketones. And again, people that get, you know, that are anti-fasters, they will say, well, what about your brain? Your brain has to use some glucose. And that is true. Your brain, parts of your brain do require about 25% glucose. So they can't solely run on ketones. But guess what? It's a perfect match, because the way fatty acids are stored, they're stored in the form of a triglyceride, which is three fatty acids on a backbone of glycerol. So you have the 25-75 split. And this glycerol backbone can be used just like glucose. Your body just turns that into glucose. And your body can make as much glucose as it needs. So whatever requirements of whatever organ, like your brain, that need glucose, your body will produce it through in the liver. It's a process called gluconeogenesis. And so you can make as much glucose as you need from other things, like, for example, the glycerol backbone. And there's no such thing as an essential carbohydrate. You know, there's essential fatty acids, right? And the essential fats, and there's essential amino acids, but there's no essential carbohydrates. And there's people that have been doing the ketogenic diet for so many years, and they're thriving. And also, I know you, I don't want to lose track of that we're talking about benefits, but just a quick tangent with people that are all about keto or all about not doing keto, you have to realize that people have different metabolic makeups. Everybody's a little bit different. So I don't tell anyone, oh, this is the best diet. I never say there's a one size fits all, because different people have a natural bent to be in either a sympathetic dominant state or a parasympathetic dominant state. And if you don't balance those, you really can't heal. So essentially, have you ever heard of like the correlation, like a type A personality, a real go-getter? If you're a type A personality, and this is why in Japan, they focus on personality types, because they know that personality types will fit into certain jobs better. You know, they don't want the choleric type A personality as the receptionist. They want the outgoing, happy person as the receptionist. They know that personality types, and they do do that. Oh gosh, that's another tangent. So wait a minute. So anyway, reel it back in. So here's the thing. If you are a type A personality and you are a constant go-getter, you are almost like in a chronic state of fight or flight. So by being in a chronic state of fight or flight, what happens is your blood pressure tends to be high. Your blood glucose tends to be high, because if you were in a fight or flight state that was enacted by a crisis, you kind of get that rush. You get a blood sugar rush. You get a blood pressure rush. You're ready to go and run or whatever. So if you're in a chronic state of fight or flight, then you want to bring back that sympathetic dominant, is what it's technically called, nervous system state, to a parasympathetic dominant. So if you're in a chronic state of fight or flight, what do you think your digestive ability is going to be? It's not going to be good, because if you're in a fight or flight state, your blood is rushed to the extremities. You're constantly ready to go. But if your core is going to be neglected, because the blood is being rushed away from the core. So you don't have the resources to break down and digest your food properly. So if you don't have a good digestion, you can't assimilate nutrients. You can't break down your nutrients to heal properly. So you have to get out of that chronic fight or flight state. So different diets will work better for different types. So if you are a chronic chronic fight or flight person, actually they don't do well with meat. They don't do well eating meat, because meat is a very high intensive metabolic. You have to have really good digestion, really strong stomach acid to break meat down. But if you're in that chronic fight or flight, and you, if you just eat vegetables, if you're a vegetarian or even a vegan, they can thrive so much better because it's easier to digest. And it brings back some balance so that they eventually can consume other things. So I would never say a one size fits all diet. So that kind of clarifies, because if people hear the word keto and they automatically think they have all these preconceived thoughts. And I think it's really good. It has therapeutic benefits to cycle it in, but not necessarily do it all the time. So back to the benefits. Okay, so I was talking about the higher cognitive abilities. So for example, I think it was Pythagoras. He used to make his students fast before he would teach math for higher cognitive abilities. And so I want to say it was a bunch of Greek philosophers that all felt that way, that you could, achieve much higher ability to write or to learn new things and take on new information if you were in a fasted state. Also, BDNF. BDNF stands for brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And it was actually nicknamed by another Harvard professor as miracle grow for the brain. So your levels of BDNF will just skyrocket in a fasted state. There's a couple other hacks you can do to get your body to produce more BDNF, which are turmeric. Turmeric helps produce BDNF, and actually coffee helps you produce BDNF, but nothing like fasting. So we used to think many years ago, they used to really think, okay, you really can't, brain damage, that's it, you're done. But we know now that the brain, there's a lot of neuroplasticity with the brain. The brain can heal. Now, nerve damage takes much, much longer to heal than other parts of your body take to heal, but it can be done. So you really can kind of get your body into a healing state for dementia even by fasting, because especially Alzheimer's is caused by, many things, but one of the things they see with Alzheimer's is a lot of plaques in your brain. So the same way you get plaques in your blood vessels from elevated blood sugar, where it's doing all that glycation damage, and then the cholesterol comes and rescues and patches it up, and then it ends up causing a plaque on that spot, is the same way your brain accumulates these plaques from elevated glucose levels. So those plaques during a fasted state will be broken down through autophagy. So the autophagy will the autophagosomes will go and break down all those plaques and clear out your brain, so that literally your brain, just think about it. Like if you think about your brain in like a house cleaning sense, if you just clean out all the junk and are able to give it a super fuel, which is the ketone bodies, which is its preferred fuel with less oxidative stress, because you know about oxidative stress, that's bad, right? That's why we take antioxidants, because we have to use oxygen, or we would die. But a ketone uses less oxygen per gram. You get more bang for your buck. You get more fuel per gram of oxygen with using fat for fuel than you do with glucose for fuel. So more energy, less oxidative stress. It's a super clean fuel. So you get that brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And one of the reasons that it elevates so high with fasting is one of the main ketone bodies, which is called beta-hydroxybutyrate, is the substrate for BDNF. So that's one of the reasons why. Longevity. So the longevity, to me, that's what made me bump up my fasting to 2 days, because of that study that I think I sent to you, and it was done in 1982, and it was on rodent study, and the mice were given, they were given access to food from day one of life throughout their whole lifespan. You have one group of mice that had access to food 24/7, right? And then you had the second group of mice that only had access to food every other day. So they'd have a 24-hour period where they had absolutely no food available, only water. Then they would have the next 24-hour period, right, with food. So you get the idea. So every other day, access to food. and then the group that could eat whenever they wanted. And the that was the only difference. And so the group, they're eating that same probably crummy GMO, you know, mice chow, right? You know, so it's not like they're eating healthy. And the group that ate every other day lived 83% longer than the group that it had. I mean, that is such an unbelievably huge amount. And so it there's so many factors that come into play. Imagine lowering the inflammation. Imagine lowering the glycation damage, lowering that chronic damage that all that excess blood sugar is causing. It's almost, think of it almost like shards of glass just running through and damaging your blood vessels. So plus they had higher cognitive function. So they had a higher quality of life, because again, it's not all about how long can we live. You want to increase your health span just as much as you want to increase your lifespan, right? So you want to have that quality of life all the way up and until you're as long as you go, right? You don't want to be dependent on anyone. You want to have your independence, and you want to have a vibrant vitality for as long as you can. And you really can. I think fasting, to me, the more I learn about it, it's like that. It's the ticket. It's the ticket to having vitality and lifespan and health span. So let me look at my list for, IGF-1. So IGF-1 is insulin-like growth factor 1. So it's a cousin to insulin, right? And again, it's a growth factor. So there's a group of people in Ecuador, and they have what's called Laron syndrome. And it's a mutation where they're dwarfs, but they have normal proportions. So they produce growth hormone, but they don't have the receptors, and they have extremely low levels of IGF-1. So that was what the researchers noted about them. That was the real ticket. It was like they have such low levels of IGF-1 and low levels of insulin. So they retain their insulin sensitivity despite their obesity rates. They never get cancer and they never get diabetes, even if they get heavy. So it's remarkable. They only had one person with Laron syndrome. They've been studied, it's kind of bizarre how much they've been studied when you start looking into it. They're just always being looked into for this unbelievable factor. And they only had one person die of cancer. Wow. And all of the history of people with Laron syndrome. And it has to do with that chronically high insulin. Insulin is such an inflammatory hormone, and it causes all these downstream effects, and you just, all those inflammatory markers are going to go up along with it, and they just don't have that. And so they actually created mice in the lab. They have these GMO mice. I know, I hate GMOs, but they made these GMO mice that they don't have IGF-1. So they couldn't produce IGF-1, and they lived, I think it was 50% longer than the mice. Now, they were smaller. The mice were very small. And isn't it interesting to think about it? Do you remember? Well, I'm a lot older, so you might not remember this, but I used to, when I was a little kid, I would watch like World Wrestling Federation with Andre the Giant. Do you remember him?
Nah, he was before my time.
Okay, there was this guy, Andre the Giant, and he had what's called like giant syndrome.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know if that's the name for it. And he was so tall.
Well, I just know him from Princess Bride.
Okay. Okay. So I can't remember how old he was when he died, but people that are excessively tall like that tend to die very young.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, isn't it? So they probably have those growth factors activated more, you know, so I'm sure
it's the exact opposite of what you're saying.
Yes,
oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
So there's definitely something to it. So you kind of want to you want to have growth factors in balance. So when you fast, people think, oh my goodness, you're going to break down, you're going to lose all your lean muscle. It wouldn't be a very wise body to do that, right? When you've got all this fat to use for fuel, why in the world would you break down your muscle? And your body upregulates all these lean tissue preserving mechanisms, like your human growth hormone, which some people, they want to claim that. You can read articles about human growth hormone being associated with longevity. Because again, remember the dwarfs that lived a really long time, never had cancer? They had the human growth hormone. They just didn't have the receptors. So your human growth hormone goes up when you fast, and that helps you. You have another, all these other mechanisms that preserve your lean body mass. So you don't lose muscle. So that's a myth. You're going to lose more muscle with dietary restriction or caloric restriction than you will with fasting, up until a certain point. Because once you get past a certain body fat percentage, that's when you're in starvation mode. Like if you research the Minnesota starvation experiments, they were past that point. So they were, you know, and they weren't even being fasted. They were being calorically restricted. So yeah, it's a totally different animal. But back to the benefits, like, and since we were talking about cancer, let's just elaborate on that a little bit more, because I know you like the, you know, gerson and stuff like that. Well, think about it. Your pancreas has several jobs, and two of which would be to secrete insulin, right, to lower that blood sugar, and another one is to make pancreatic enzymes. So those pancreatic enzymes are really a key thing, because what is the deadliest form of cancer that we know of? The deadliest form of cancer is pancreatic cancer, right? So once your pancreas goes and you've don't have those pancreatic enzymes, you're really in trouble, because a cancer cell has an outer membrane that's really tough, and your immune system really has a hard time getting to it to destroy it. So that outer membrane can be dissolved through one of the pancreatic enzymes, which is trypsin, like one of the protease family of enzymes, the protein breaking down enzymes. So if you have enough of the pancreatic enzymes, but think about it, if you are chronically eating sugar and or glucose, and your poor pancreas is just like insulin, 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 it's not going to have enough time to secrete those pancreatic enzymes. So here, your chance of your cancer cells getting the upper hand goes up. So again, there's multi factors when it comes to the cancer thing. But here's the really, really cool thing. The work of Dr. Thomas Seyfried out of Boston, to me, it's been reproduced. So they can't deny it. But the cancer industry just wants to turn a blind eye to this, because they want to research genetics. They are all about researching genetics. And it's a lost cause, because the genetic mutations are secondary to the breakdown of the metabolism. Cancer is definitely a metabolic disease, and I'll explain that. So Dr. Seyfried's work showed that if you have a cancer cell and you have that nucleus that has upregulated, and it's the genetic expression of the oncogenes, which are those cancer genes, right, have been upregulated, and then the tumor suppressor genes have gone down, and you have a full-blown cancer cell, the mitochondria do not work. Remember, those mitochondria can't break down glucose or fat inside of them. They reverted to what? To fermentation in the cytoplasm with that, you know, upregulating the glucose receptors. So if you were to take out the nucleus and of that cancer cell, and you put in a healthy nucleus, right, that's got the tumor suppressor genes up and the oncogenes down, but you still have the broken mitochondria, it still reverts back to a cancer cell. But if you take that cancer cell's nucleus that the oncogenes are on and the tumor suppressor genes are down, if you take that cancer cell nucleus and put it into a cell that has healthy mitochondria, then the cancer, the genes will revert back to the right way. The genetics will go back to normal. So the tumor suppressor genes will turn on and express, and the oncogenes will turn off, because it's primarily a metabolic disease. So if you can address it as such, then the gene aspect is secondary. So it's not a matter of chasing after what gene makes what protein, because they had that all wrong from the get-go anyway. Remember the Human Genome Project? When they did that, they discovered that Genetic engineering was founded on the one gene, one protein theory. And they always said, oh, you know, we're going to change the genetics of this to produce this protein, and it's not going to affect anything else. And they were so wrong, because it turns out we only have about 20,000 genes, but we produce 200,000 proteins. So one gene can make so many different things. It can express in so many different ways. So you want to eat food, and you want to have a lifestyle that causes your body to express each gene in the best possible way. So there's no reason, if you have the BRCA gene, to panic. You know, you are not a victim of your genes. The BRCA gene is not a bad gene. God did not make a bad gene. It's just your lifestyle has caused it to express in a bad way. Yeah. But if you eat cruciferous vegetables like cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, your BRCA gene will protect in a protective way against breast cancer.
Now, the BRCA gene, I just want to clarify what you're saying here, because some of it's going over my head. The BRCA gene is the cancer gene, right?
The BRCA gene was what, remember Angelina Jolie had the BRCA gene, so she decided to go ahead and have a double mastectomy because she was afraid she would get breast cancer.
Which is ridiculous. Yeah.
But she didn't, all she had to do was eat more cabbage, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, and that gene would have been...
Yeah, my aunt has that gene. It's just what you're saying is like when they test you and it's like you have the cancer gene, because that's what my mom said. Oh, she has a cancer gene.
Yeah.
And then my mom got tested to see if she had that same gene, and she said no, she didn't have it. So somehow the sisters didn't. They both didn't have that gene. But you're saying
tell your aunt to just consume cruciferous vegetables that are raw on a regular basis. And it will influence the expression of that gene in a positive direction.
And can you give some examples of cruciferous vegetables?
Yes. Yes. So that's it. I mean, it's that simple. So, yeah, because we don't have bad genes. We have to think about epigenetics. You know, that's kind of still a hot topic, is epigenetics, the control above the genes. How can we influence our genetic expression? So when you think about it, if you have, you know, you produce over 200,000 different proteins, you can almost like, you know, think of yourself as being able to be a awesome version of yourself. Because think about it, if all your genes were expressing in a negative way, you'd have this person. But if you could influence all your genes to express in a positive way, you could have a totally different you.
Yeah.
You know?
That's super interesting. So, like, for instance, if I don't eat, right, if I wake up in the morning, I'm a breakfast guy. I love to eat breakfast, and that's bad, obviously. Okay. But that's just kind of how I've always been. I've just, like, I love breakfast. So I eat breakfast right away. If I don't eat breakfast and it gets to, like, 11 o'clock, I'm just dying inside. I'm so hungry. I'm just, like...
Okay.
So, but you said in an interview I watched of you that, you know, you get like that, but then if you let that pass, it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
I've just never actually let that pass. I always just eat. So talk about how, like, when you fast, you get these intense cravings, but then they subdue.
Yes. Okay. So here's the thing with ghrelin, is the hunger hormone. So again, the hormonal components of like weight loss and things like that are so much greater than the whole calories in, calories out thing. Because the hormonal components really have they trump anything you try to do. Because even I totally believe people that say they're reducing their calories and just not losing weight, because your body, that resting energy expenditure will totally go down. Their body temperature will become colder, and so that their metabolism will kind of meet that new lower amount of fuel coming in. But back to so ghrelin, the hunger hormone, is usually, not in everybody, usually lowest in the morning, believe it or not. So when you wake up out of bed, take a mental note. It could be more of a thing that you just want to eat breakfast because you love eating breakfast, rather than the fact that you're actually physically hungry, because your hormone, your ghrelin, should be low in the morning. But here's another thing. If you hunger will come in waves. It's not like hunger builds, you know, continuously. It will rise at normal meal times and dip down again. So it sometimes 10, 20 minutes later, you're like, I'm not even hungry. Because I'm sure you've probably had that happen, right? Where you got really busy and you skipped a meal and you look at the clock and you're like, oh, yeah, I totally missed lunch, but I'm not even hungry. And then you'll get hungry at dinner time again. So essentially breakfast stands for break the fast. So you don't have to break your fast at like 6 a.m. or 8 a.m. or whatever. You can wait and push that out a little bit. So you could push it out if you want to eat like 11 to 7. What were you thinking? If you had to choose an 8-hour eating window, what would you choose?
Well, I would probably honestly try to go as long as I can during the morning. You're right, because I get super hungry right before bed, too. I always eat right before bed, which I know is another horrible thing. I have so many bad habits that I'm just trying to fix. And so that's one of the reasons why I want to talk about these subjects, because it gets me motivated to implement different things in my life.
Yeah, okay, so those are two, you recognize two bad things, that you tend to eat first thing and you're kind of, and you'll eat right before you go to bed. Well, if you eat right before you go to bed, your body goes through all these incredible regenerative processes while you're sleeping, unless it's busy digesting food, because digesting food is very energy intensive, hence the word, the food coma. Like we've all overeaten on Thanksgiving or something and we can't get off the couch.
Yeah.
It's because our body is using every bit of energy that it has to break down all that food. So if you're doing that right before you go to bed, you're kind of cheating yourself out of all these other processes that your body could be doing if it wasn't having to work on that food. So you do definitely want to pull the last meal of the day farther away from bedtime, you know? They even say, you know, eating with the circadian rhythm, like sun up to sundown, like that kind of stuff. There's a lot to that, because again, what happens is your organs are on a circadian rhythm. So your pancreas that's secreting the insulin to get that glucose out of your bloodstream is actually went to sleep with the sun. It tends to go on a circadian rhythm. So if the pancreas went to bed, right, you don't have the ability to secrete the insulin to get it out of your bloodstream. And so if you were to take your blood sugar like late at night, that's why people are shocked sometimes when they take their blood sugar late at night. They're like, oh my goodness, am I a diabetic? Because their pancreas already went to bed and clocked out for the day. So a lot of times to offset that, you do want to definitely pull, or else you're going to have all those detrimental effects of the high blood sugar and damaging your endothelial cells and creating plaques and creating all that glycation damage, right? So you got to pull that food eating away from bedtime and try to push it out and squeeze it in for 8 hours.
So again,
which I think is really doable.
Yeah, it's totally doable. Again, what is the times you do? What is the windows that you take?
Yeah, you know, lately, because ever since I upped my 2 days of fasting, you know, instead of the 1 day, when I was doing 1 day of fasting, I would do either 9 to 5 in the wintertime and 11 to 7 in the summertime. So, but then now that I fast 2 days a week, I've taken a lot more liberty to not even think about it. Like if I feel like having something to eat later, like if I used to always start the day off with black coffee, because if I added fun stuff to it, if I added heavy cream or things, that's eating. You know what I mean? That's not, so I would have already started my eating window, right, at that point. So now I tend to still have my fun coffees in the morning and start my eating window earlier, because I figure, oh, I make up for it with a whole nother day.
Yeah, well, 11 to 7 seems like what would work for me too. you know, when the Bible talks about with prayer and fasting, it really does make sense that, you know, your mind's, you know, able to concentrate more. You're able to think clearer. And that's why you would want to fast. Why, if you have something that you really need answered, a prayer you really need answered, you know, it comes by prayer and fasting. That's pretty interesting.
Oh, absolutely. Because think about how much more you have, again, the mental clarity and having no brain fog. Like when you read your Bible, if you have all that extra time to read and you read your Bible, you're going to find yourself not having to read the same passage over and over again because you're so much sharper. Yeah. So you get so much more out of it that way. It's incredible.
Yeah. Well, I found, you know, ever since I started to do the juicing again, it seems like I do have a lot clearer of a mind and stuff, but that is just another way you can make it even more clear. So
yeah,
I need to implement that.
When you were talking about how some people, they have maybe a seizure disorder, right? And that was actually how the ketogenic diet was originally developed by John Hopkins, was in a treatment for seizures. Because think about this, like if your body is either in a fasted state or if you're in a ketogenic diet, it's basically the same thing. You're either consuming body fat or dietary fat, right, for fuel. So your glucose levels are going to remain so even, just even keeled, right? If you're on a sugar fix and you have a bagel and then you have a glass of orange juice and you have this gigantic spike of glucose, right? So you're going to have these huge spikes that can activate a seizure in some people. So when they developed the ketogenic diet, in order to stabilize the blood sugar so that and it would control the seizures. And it's just remarkable. I think it does it in over 74% of people can regulate their seizures through the ketogenic diet. And so by taking that information, there was a man, his name was Dr. Dominic D'Agostino. And he was contacted by the naval research. So the U.S. Navy had this type of diving equipment that didn't produce like detectable bubbles. So it was more covert operation stuff, right? So, but the Navy SEALs that were using that new equipment were having seizures. So they contacted Dominic D'Agostino and he fat adapted the divers. And so that they were using ketones for their brains, right? And they were having that, you know, even glucose, and they would stop having seizures using that new diving equipment. And they could hold their breath. They could increase their breath holding time, double their breath holding time, all these different things. So it's absolutely remarkable when you think about how it just brings everything kind of back into balance. And it goes back to the body is so much better adapted and better equipped to deal with a lack of food or a lack of glucose than it is to deal with a huge influx of it with too much.
Yeah. So
I thought that was cool.
Yeah, that is cool. So I guess one of the questions I have then is, when should you not fast?
I don't think kids should fast because, again, it interferes with growth receptor. You know what I mean? There's that factor. So they should not necessarily fast, but they could do like a ketogenic diet. So if you have like an overweight child that's already getting a fatty liver and is already like becoming diabetic, you can put them on a restricted eating window, like the 8-8-16. So which really isn't fasting. And then they can also do more of a low carb, high fat diet to bring them back into balance and get back to a healthy weight, get rid of their fatty liver. Because it's really interesting. People there's a difference between subcutaneous fat and visceral fat. So visceral fat's the really bad fat. That's the interstitial organ fat that lines all you're in between all your organs, right? And so that is the fat that causes that midsection obesity, where people could be thin everywhere else and have this huge stomach, right? Because it's all visceral fat, which is the really bad fat, because it's because your body's almost like in that fight or flight mode when you're unhealthy. It's almost like a background level of fight or flight, and it deposits all that fat in that area so it can grab it really fast if it needs it. So whereas subcutaneous fat is not really as dangerous, although subcutaneous fat, fat in general, causes your body to produce, for every pound of fat you gain, you produce between 1 and 7 miles of blood vessels. Your body, it's angiogenesis, it's new blood vessel making. It produces new blood vessels to feed all of that, you know, adipose tissue. But with the, what were you saying about the,
well,
I lost my train of
thought. No worries. So you're saying if you have this big belly, then you're not healthy?
Yeah. That's bad.
You're not a healthy person.
Right. That is super bad. Yeah, that's bad because, and here's the funny thing is, some people could be really overweight and actually still have insulin sensitivity. You know what I mean? So they actually don't have visceral fat. They can be so heavy and just have subcutaneous fat. They're rare. It's very rare, but it happens. And then, because they won't have any of the other biomarkers. But then there's a term that was coined by Dr. Robert Lustig. It's called a TOFI. It's called a TOFI, which stands for thin on the outside, fat on the inside. So, and they are the people that don't have a lot of subcutaneous fat. They're not heavy looking, but they have all this interstitial organ fat inside deep, and it's really bad. And they're predisposed to cancer and diabetes, because there are thin people that get diabetes.
Yeah.
And they're, I mean, it's rare. The TOFIs are not common, but yeah, they happen.
Huh.
So.
Well, so, okay. And I know you talked about this earlier about how long that one guy, for instance, that you brought up, but how long can you go without eating?
That's a great question. So, yeah, I mean, it depends on how much. It's the same thing as, like, how long can you hold out in your house for? How much food is in your freezer?
Yeah.
You know? So if you have a lot of food energy on your body, like he did, he had hundreds of pounds to use as fat for fuel. And, you know, so he was able to go 382 days. Like, people with that are lean.
That just seems
like I was
so impossible to me. 380 days. How does he do it? So, well, he was able to drink and do all that.
Yeah. But yes. Yeah.
How skinny did he get by the end of that year?
180 pounds.
Wow.
He was like 420, 430. He was in the fours.
Wow.
Now, so here's the thing. There's a clinic called True North Clinic, and it's in California, and they fast you up to 40 days.
Wow.
And so, doctor,
under supervision,
Dr. Gold. Yes, yes, medically supervised. And it's funny because I've always been told it was very expensive, but I just listened to an interview with Dr. Goldhammer, and he's been the lead physician of True North Clinic for over 20 years. They've fasted over 2,000 people, never killed anybody, and they reversed, like, all manner of autoimmune disease, cancer, diabetes, you name it. They've reversed it with water fasting.
Well,
and they're so strict. Like, Dr. Goldhammer, again, I really respect him, and he's doing an incredible thing with this fasting, but he's a militant vegan. So he is a no exceptions militant vegan, which I do not agree with. But so they refeed you on this, you know, vegan protocol. But I mean, you can't argue with his success. His success is, like, better than any conventional means. Conventional doctors don't reverse your diabetes. They manage the condition with really expensive drugs. You know what I mean? So they don't.
You go to this clinic and you fast for 40 days and they torture you for 40 days.
Well,
you have to pay for that.
Yeah.
No, it sounds...
Well, I always thought it was expensive. That's what I was saying. I thought it was really expensive. But then I found out that it's actually only $149 a night. So it's, like, better than a hotel.
Yeah.
And they don't provide any food. So they're fasting you. And I guess it's very, you know, there's massage, you know, things like that to make your stay pleasant. Plus you're doing it in community. You're with all these other people that are fasting.
Just all starving together.
Yeah.
Well, I know Moses fasted 40 days and 40 nights. And so this is like the Moses fast.
That's the most they will do is 40 days. That's their limit.
Yeah.
And I wanted, you know, I don't even think, I don't know for sure. I've never talked to him, but I don't think he's a Christian but based on some of the comments that I've heard him say in interviews. So I don't think he's a Christian, but it's interesting how he picked that 40 day number as the maximum.
Well, I wouldn't suggest you fast for 40 days, Lisa. You have nothing stored up. Or could you do it?
I couldn't fast for that long. And that's the thing. You can only fast for what you have reserves for. You can't exceed that. Once you exceed that, then it's all detrimental. That's when you're starving. Body's starving.
Okay. Now you're making more sense here. Okay. Now you just put it together. It all came together for me in that statement. So, for instance, I don't know if you've seen this show called Alive.
No.
It's on Amazon Prime. You can check it out, and it's been brought to you by Alive. The show called Alive, right? They go out and they try to hunt their own food, and a lot of times people just starve to death out there. But you can make it that long. That you would probably like that show.
I'll have to check it out. Yeah. You know, you can, like I said, you have a person that's 12% body fat, which is relatively very lean. They still have 100,000 calories to utilize through a fast before they get into the danger zone.
Yeah.
Once you get below like 5 or 4% body fat and you're fasting, that your body can't, it won't activate good genetic expression any longer. You're going to be in a crisis state. That's not good.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think this sums up a lot. Okay. Oh, one more question. Okay. So I know a lot of people use fasting for detox. Can you talk about that?
Yes.
And how you can use it for detox?
Okay. Well, again, if you are fasting, you tend to break a lot of times, the same way, like in an animal, right? In a cow, the fat, like if you don't have organic full fat, you know, milk, the toxins that animal was exposed to are stored in the fat, because that's what your body kind of, you know, or an animal's body will do. They don't know how to metabolize all these poisons, and they just stick them in the fat tissue.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with a person. You know, we're exposed to so many chemicals, and they get stored in our fat tissue. And so when you break down your fat tissue, you actually can have almost like what they call a Herxheimer reaction, which is like a healing crisis where you're breaking down all these toxins, just like when you're killing cancer cells, like whether it be from like Gerson therapy. That's why you have to do the coffee enemas in order to help your body, because your liver is your main detox organ, right? And so in order to help your body rid itself of all this poison, you would do something like a coffee enema to kind of help your body along. Because that was Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, the guy he learned everything from. He cured his pancreatic cancer with using huge amounts of those digestive pancreatic enzymes, and he dialed in his diet, and his tumors were shrinking to the point where he could visibly see it through his skin. His tumors were bulging through his body, and he could actually see them shrinking down, but then he would get so violently ill because he had all this dead tumor waste circulating inside of his body that overwhelmed his liver. So he used the coffee enemas, and it worked beautifully. So,
wow. You know what? And I want to do a whole show on this with you, Lisa, to explain why, because, mm-hmm. you know, I get mocked a lot for, supporting the Gerson therapy and believing in it and doing the coffee enemas, because I I've done them, and I know how good it makes me feel and how much healthier I feel. So I just kind of feel bad for the people that mock me for this, because it's like, what are you mocking me?
Well, it's interesting. It was in the Merck manuals, because it used to be in the Merck manuals up until the 70s, because they knew that it would purge a person's, like if a person was acutely poisoned, that was a modality that they would use to help rid the body of the poison.
Wow.
So it wasn't the Merck manual. It was a conventional practice up until the 70s, when they pretty much, you know, the Rockefeller, all that stuff, they kind of eliminated all the alternative things. And that was one of them. But that used to be a conventional practice. And just, you know, to remark on toxins, the ability of your body, again, to do with epigenetics and upregulating your genetic expression in a protective way. They did an experiment in this doc. Well, they repeated it multiple times, but they highlighted it in a documentary. And it was, they injected mice with 3 to 5 times the amount of chemotherapy, obviously per body weight, that a human being would go through during chemo, right? So they had these mice in two groups, and they both were injected with 3 to 5 times the amount of chemotherapy. The only variable was that one group of mice had water fasted for 48 hours prior to being injected. So the group that had access to food all the time and was injected with the chemo, they almost all of them died. And if they didn't die, they were in the sorriest, most lethargic state, like they could barely move. But all, and I repeat, all of the mice that were fasted for 48 hours prior to being injected with humongously toxic levels, 3 to 5 times the dose of chemo, all had no ill effects. It was like they're just running around like nothing happened. So they started doing it in an experimental phase trials with people. And so they highlighted some of those stories on the documentary where these women that had to go through chemotherapy fasted prior to their chemotherapy and suffered no ill effects. Then their oncologist was like, oh, I don't really think you should fast this time. Don't fast before this next session. And they wouldn't fast. And then they were just throwing up and sick as a dog. And
well, that's
so your body, yeah. It's incredible.
Well, I'm definitely going to recommend that to people that I know, because I know a lot of people in my family have got cancer. It seems like everyone in my family that's older than like 70 is getting cancer. My sister just had, this is the saddest thing to say, but she just had like part of her ear cut off. I'm like, what are you doing to yourself? Like she probably could have healed herself. And it just,
yeah, you know,
skin
topical
cancer.
Tumors, there's a lot of, what is it? That eggplant extract, there's BEC5, and it used to be called Skin Answer. And then the FDA shut the whole thing down. Right. And so they had to come back with a new name. It's the same exact formula. So Skin Answer came back to, Sunspot ES. So Sunspot, yes. And that is an incredible topical. Like, it's amazing. So if people that get it's called actinic keratosis. Like, I don't know if we're like spots that you've gotten really bad sunburn, sometimes will start to get a little slightly discolored, like light brown, and then they will get kind of crunchy on your face. And it just, sometimes you can slough it off, but it comes back hard and that stuff will just eat it right up. So it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I would love to talk to you more about this, Lisa. I know we could talk forever. If you want to find out more about this subject, I know Lisa has released 3 videos on her YouTube channel. What is that YouTube channel name, Lisa?
Oh, you'll have to link it in the comments. Okay. That's the only video I've ever done.
I know.
It's a 3-part.
It's great, though. Sorry, it's great. Yeah. You learn a lot about fasting.
No, fasting, I'm telling you, it's the if there was going to be a magic bullet, if you were to say to me, like, what is the the best way to live the healthiest life, I would say you have to be able to fast regularly.
Yeah, and I'm going to get Dr. Group on the show, hopefully. He just wrote a book on the power of fasting, and I think that's the name of the book. I got to check it out, but I know he's a big supporter of fasting as well. But we're out of time. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Lisa, we got to get you back on to talk about a few things. We got to get you on to talk about the masks. We got to get you back on to talk about Gerson and some alternative cancer therapies. Because, you know, like I said, a lot of people in my family have cancer, and I want to talk about these alternative therapies because I feel like just people are just going into these, they're being scared into doing things to themselves. And I want to just equip, you know, my small listeners, my little base here, to just, you know, think about things before they do them, if they do, you know, have cancer.
Yeah, and you can fasting, no matter what they choose as their therapy of choice, but no matter what they choose, fasting works in conjunction with it, because fasting will weaken the cancer cells and make them more vulnerable to whatever you are using to try to destroy them. So, and I'm really excited to hear about Dr. Group's book, because I followed his fasting. He did a 21-day fast. Did you see that? Yeah, he did a 21-day water fast, and he would videotape himself every day, like how he felt. Uh-huh. And I remember watching, you know, the day he was doing the refeeding and he ate a little bit of watermelon. Like, I watched like all those videos. So that's cool that he wrote a book on it.
Yeah. Well, you probably, you know, was inspired by that fast. But yeah, thank you so much, Lisa, for coming on the show. We'll get you back on soon here. I'm glad you're feeling better, and I'm glad your back's doing a little bit better.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you so much. If you guys want to support us here at Framing the World, make sure you check out our website, framingtheworld.com. And also you can support us by going to Patreon, and just $1 a month really helps. So if you're listening out there and you want to support us, go to our Patreon account, or you can get a lot of different materials on our website. But thank you again, Lisa, for coming on the show. Any final thoughts before we take off here?
Yeah, if you're on any type of medications, especially blood pressure lowering medications or blood sugar lowering medications, you should not no fasting, because you are going to, you know, if you're still taking those medications and then you're lowering your blood sugar, you're going to be in a bad place. So you really do have to consult. You have to work with a practitioner that's going to work with you. They need to at least appreciate the benefits that this could have for you to get off your medications, but they need to get you to slowly come down off those medications to meet the new need for lowered amounts of the medication. So you really have to be careful. And again, the most dangerous part to fasting historically is the refeeding, because your body can adapt really quick to fasting if you're not on medications, but when you go to refeed after an extended fast, you can make yourself so sick because everything's been shut down for so long. You have to really ease back into the refeed. So that's my word of caution. Again, we better put out that disclaimer. So consult with a physician. We are not physicians. This is not medical advice.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much, Lisa. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and tell your husband I said hi, okay?
Oh, yeah, same to you guys. I miss you guys.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Lisa, that is Lisa Palumbo. Thank you so much for talking with us. We'll get her back on soon. Yeah, guys, just think about these things and research them for yourself. You know, like she said, we're not doctors or anything. Search these things out for yourself, and I hope you gain some information today that will help you out. I know I definitely have, and I'm going to try it, Lisa. I'm going to try fasting. I don't have anything stored up too much. I do have a little bit stored up here, But I think I could do a week. I don't know though. It would be a rough week for me.
You got to work up to it. Don't do it all at once. Work your way up.
I would be like, I don't think it'd work too well. Yeah, I'll work up to it. I'll do the window. I think that's a good place for me to start, is just, limit myself the 11 to 7.
Yes. Perfect start.
All right. Thank you so much, Lisa. Thank you so much for tuning in to this stream. I hope you have a good day, guys, and God bless.
Yep.